And from the border of Liberty and Prosperity on the highway to north is Safety Wars for Tuesday, December 10th, 2024. We're starting off a little bit earlier tonight. I had some meetings and we got interrupted last night. One of my children had a medical situation come up. I had to resolve right then and there. Sorry, folks. That's the way it is. How's everybody doing out there today? So, I did not release last night's program on podcast because we were... didn't get around with it by the time had no urgent care, nothing serious, I assure you of that. Just the way it is. But anyway, we're going to revisit some of those stories from yesterday here because I've had a little time to reflect on them, and I listened to the episode and I said, you know what, I said was fine. Because that it wasn't as smooth as maybe it could have been. And we are enjoying the Christmas season. Good. Got Mr. Snowman, Mr. Christmas tree, everything in there. Okay, so where are we going to go today? We're going to revisit some of this stuff because I've had some time to think about it. Maybe I could articulate my position a little bit better, but it's still the same position. So yesterday in Altoona, Pennsylvania, where I have driven through. I believe I've been there based on some of the photos I'm seeing. I believe I might have been in that McDonald's at one time in the past here. So Manhattan police have obtained the warrant for the arrest of a 26-year-old, and I'm not mentioning his name on here, the suspect in killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. The suspect was arrested at a McDonald's in Altoona, Pennsylvania, while carrying a gun, mask, and writings linking him to the ambush. He is being held without bail in Pennsylvania, and it's basically going to be that he has some charges there. Not as major as a murder, but he does have some charges there. Unlicensed firearm, forgery, providing false identification, and everything else. They're going to have to figure things out until he... went in there. Now, before they extradite him to New York. Now, what is haunting, and then the second of his cases is Daniel Penny case, where he was found not guilty of criminally negligent homicide in the Jordan Neely death in New York also. Daniel Penny was acquitted in the 2020,000 death of Jordan Neely, which prosecutors argued at trial was the result of Penny going too far in restraining Neely on a New York City subway. The verdict followed Friday's dismissal of a more serious manslaughter charge. The jurors said they couldn't agree on, and prosecutors moved to dismiss so the jury could consider the lesser charge. Penny's lawyers, I wanted a mistrial on Friday instead of dismissing the top count, but this result leaves him clear of all charges after the jury found the prosecutor failed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he was guilty of criminally negligent homicide. So a lot of speeches were given at the end of that thing, you know. So I come down, got to stop with the filler words. I come up from doing something. No, I work out of the home this week until I do field work, which is scheduled for pretty much the rest of the month. And I'm like, wow, what's going on here? And my father-in-law is watching the TV. No, just completely enthralled. Some of the outside help that we have come in to help him along they're pinned to the TV. They can't believe it. I go, and I'm like, what's going on? I said, son of a gun, the guy is, and this is Daniel Penny. I'm shocked that he was found innocent, to be honest with you. I thought a jury would convict him, but in the penalty phase, he would get a very light sentence or no sentence, because based on the one remaining charge, my understanding, I'm not an attorney, but from my understanding, he was, the option was zero jail time, and zero fine on that. Don't know. I'm not an attorney, but this is what I understand. Going on with United Healthcare, right? What I think both of these things have common in the fallout here is that we're becoming more and more of a calloused society with this. So with United Healthcare, there are all different types of stories out there from commentators, from stories with internet sleuths, because a lot of times, and I was part of an observer, not a part of, but I was an observer back during the 2001 anthrax attacks in 2002 with people contacting me that were internet sleuths. Wanted information or anything. I'm like, dude, I can't talk. No, I have an NDA here, blah, 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 blah. And they were pumping you for information, but I kept observing and looking from afar on this. You could catch me on, if it's still out there, 2009, I did an episode of Dr. Carol's couch, Carol Lieberman. She's psychiatrist who's also in a lot of TV shows, apparently. I've seen her on a couple episodes of TV, these procedurals on crimes and things of that nature, Hollywood type things. And she had me on for an interview on that in 2009. And again, I have NDAs. I can't really discuss about CBS or NBC, but in general, I can was in the public record on certain things. I've been very careful there. But I'm seeing a lot of these commentaries out there with this. And apparently nobody wanted to help this whole thing with United Healthcare, because apparently this person, the victim, what's his name? Let me get his name again. Shame on me. Right. Brian Thompson, at least on the internet, and this may or may not be true, he was not a very sympathetic individual. So they say, screw it. We're not going to help out in this investigation, these internet sleuths. We're also getting, things. And again, those people have been blocked on my social media, by the way, in case you're wondering why you're not on my Facebook or Instagram or X or any of these other platforms where I have been able, where I've been able to, I've blocked you. People saying, and people who I've known, because I'm not going to put up with it. This is not an issue of people making a mistake and then giving them the opportunity to learn or anything else, saying, the man deserved to die. This is an evil individual because of the health of CEO. Or the mantra that's been going on for years. Well, they're billionaires, therefore they're evil people. They got rich off of poor people's backs. I'm sorry. I don't do that. No, I don't do it. I don't support it. I don't encourage it. I don't enable that kind of thinking. Right, with that. Now, we hear on the Daniel Penny case here, we heard in some of the speeches afterwards from activist organizations calling for vigilantism against white people. Now, was there a racial element to this case? Maybe, maybe not. Based on what I can see, maybe there's an argument to be made for that. But to go out and say, we got to go out, and this is all in the speeches afterwards, this is on national TV here. We don't like the way a legal case call comes out, so we're going to go and we're going to call for violence against people that may have nothing to do with this. There were very positive messages with that case also. Go out and do something positive, help somebody. If you don't like the message, if you don't from this case, if you don't like the verdict, go out and work in your community, have meetings this weekend, how we're going to respond in a positive manner here with this, what's an effective manner, right? And calls for peace, calls for unity, and everything. Guess what? I'll support that and everything. We have to have a dialogue here on specifically mental health issues and how they're treated in this country, meaning the United States. Unfortunately, I've had extensive experience with dealing with people with mental health issues, whether inside of work or outside of work. And I'm going to say the person who was killed in here in this Jordan Neely, Daniel Penny case, Jordan Neely was being the one killed. The system failed them. System outright failed this person. Talk to any general practitioner out there. Go out and talk to them. And if they're honest with you, a lot of them will not, because they're afraid of HIPAA. We're going to be relieved of medical information, right? Let me explain it to you with HIPAA, all right? It's the same rules as for a religious person, like a Catholic priest, Lutheran minister. You're allowed to say, hey, you're allowed, I'm not saying that priests do this, but, they're allowed to say, well, you know, we're getting a lot of issues in our community with this issue. That's a sin. We're having issues in this community. They're allowed to say something like that. They're not allowed to say that dude over there committed adultery. They're not allowed to say that. So doctors under HIPAA, my understanding, could generally say X, Y, and Z, right, with something. And there's been situations where, with chronic illnesses and everything, where I have said to doctors, how many of these situations have you cured? Is there a successful treatment for this? Blah, blah, blah. And guess what? They're able to go and give you information on that. One of the questions I always ask, with this situation, how do people actually take their medication? Could be high blood pressure, it could be diabetes, it could be any number of chronic conditions that are out there. And the answer comes out back as, no, Jimmy, we're having problems with this health issue, with diabetes. People don't want to take their insulin. And that's been well documented in the popular press. People don't want to take their diabetes medication. Type 1 diabetics don't want to take insulin a lot of times because insulin puts on weight. So people don't take their insulin medication. That's the biggest threat we have. People don't want to talk to a dentist. Well, people don't want to take their brush their teeth after every meal, which used to be the thing, right? The recommendation, right? People don't want to take their high blood pressure medication because of the side effects that they're doing. They can't perform sexually. They can't do this. They can't. So they don't take their high. Okay, you get this stuff. Now let's transfer that. Where am I going with it? It sounds like you're going off on the weeds here. Let's transfer this to mental health. You think people with mental health issues want to take their medication? With some of these mental illnesses, they go off the medication. They're feeling high and mighty here, especially when what they used to call manic depression, or now they call bipolar type 1 and type 2. They're high. Oh, I want to do this. And everything else. And then there's a depressive part when they go the opposite direction. Right? So here we have somebody allegedly, based on all press accounts, Jordan Neely with mental health issues, right? With that, right? Allegedly schizophrenia, that's been in the news and other things. Maybe he didn't have the support system. Perhaps if he would have been in some type of a setting where he couldn't be a threat to harm to others or to himself or to anybody else, things might not have worked out this way. Because in this country, we have reduced the capacity. We don't have the capacity. Again, we have more people, and that's part of the problem with these mental health issues that are now diagnosed, and we can help these people. Unlike in the past, where there was no help, and you ended up just institutionalizing them, lobotomizing them with psychosurgery, or beating them half to death, right? That's what was, you know, look back before the mid-1970s on this. There's a lot of research on this. And even after the 1970s, there's a lot of research on this, reports. I mean, horrific things going on out there. Perhaps if we had a kinder system where people don't automatically opt into these things, or what's the word I'm looking for? Maybe that's not the word. You have to prove a problem a lot of these times, and it's an overwhelming situation to get someone into a facility to get help. It really is. And you have to, you know, again, they may not have the methods, they may not have the means of getting into that facility, they may not have that support network. And the system will say, you know what, as long as he's on medication, I don't know if this happened here, as long as the person's on medication, well, they could be out in the community. Now you're dealing with the other part that I mentioned. Can they stay on the medication? Does their health change with something else, where now that medication is not as effective? Maybe they lost weight, they gained weight, they became diabetic, they managed their diabetes better. They are under a, maybe they're dealing with a death in the family. Is that the appropriate dose of medication? You don't know that. So what ends up having to happen is that person needs to be monitored. I'm going to take a wild leap here that maybe if someone's homeless, they can't be monitored here. They can't be helped. So what am I calling for? Empathy for these people. Doesn't matter what their situation is. Forgiveness, empathy, helping them out. And as I mentioned yesterday, what we used to call tough love is out there. I worked with groups over the years. I've spoken to many social workers and everything else, and we're going to get more on that in a minute, where they've said, I said, man, you're freaking rough on this person. This is rough. You're being real strict with them. And you know what they tell me? Jimmy, if I'm not tough on this person, and remember, we got to deal with 20 or 30 of these patients. If we're not tough on them, they're going to walk all over us because that's part of the illness. And it's a chicken and egg thing. Right? Does the illness make them difficult? Are they difficult because of the illness? Who knows? Or is that one of the attributes of getting that illness, being prone to that mental health situation? It's one of those, again, I'm not an expert, but I am experienced with it. So what ends up happening is with these situations is maybe we're being a little bit soft on these folks. I'm going to put it out there. Maybe, perhaps, because every mental health person that I have dealt with, social workers, psychiatrists, psychologists, everything that I've spoken to on this subject, that's one of the things that they say. Maybe we're being a little bit too easy on them sometimes, because we had one extreme where we're out there abusing the patients. We're out there yelling and screaming at the patients, restraining the patients, doing everything on the extreme before all these modern medical medicines came in. And then now all of a sudden we've gone the other way, perhaps. Maybe we're not as strict as we need to be. And I mean in the most loving way. I'm not saying beat people. I'm not saying restrain them and everything, but you got to be firm. Is the system set up for that? And here's the other thing. We have a system to deal with these things that's failing, right? Maybe our focus has got to be not on a system to help people all the time. Maybe one-on-one contact, reaching out to people, helping people, being empathetic to them, supporting them, having patience, understanding, forgiveness, one-on-one, rather than set up a system with that. And maybe if you could go out there and try to help people as you're able to. And I don't mean financial. I don't mean money. Engagement. Support. How many people do you know in a mental health crisis that maybe could be from a death in the family? Maybe it could be financial stress, which is a common one. Maybe it can be any number of problems. How much do they need? How much do they want? How much can they, how much would it be to just to go out there and say, you know what, I love you, I support you. I'm going to help you through this. Or I'm going to make sure you get help. Maybe I can't help you, but maybe we can get you help on this. Maybe we could support people. Maybe if we did that, we'd have less of these situations. Maybe we would have fewer Jordan Neely's out there if we could do that. With that, I don't know. That's what I'm going to say. That's why I always call for peace with this. Now, talking about the United Healthcare thing, I mean, it disgusts me. I'm sorry. It disgusts me that we have people who are celebrating the death and murder of a person. Right? With this. I don't care if I disagree with the person. I don't care if I have, for some unknown reason, a hatred towards a person. You do not go around wishing people death and ill feelings and wishing them an ill fate. This man had a family out here with this. Now, the alleged perpetrator here has a history also. Apparently, he became more and more withdrawn because of a chronic back injury that he had. That maybe he didn't get all the help that he needed with that. Maybe, I don't know what the context is. I don't know what his defense will be. There's been a lot of speculation from people who have known him. Some people can't believe that he did something like this. I don't know. But there's, I'm not justifying him, I'm not taking his side, but I want to make sure that we understand everything that happened here. And if we go around with these TV folks and folks on the internet with all this speculation, it's not going to help the situation. Now, imagine people are out there wishing harm on other people. This man had a wife and children, is my understanding. Again, this sounds like another mental health situation here with this. Why would somebody who came from a pretty affluent background, had a pretty good education, he was allegedly a valedictorian where he went to an exclusive high school, and then he apparently was working for a company as an engineer of some sort, a computer engineer, software information engineer, something like that. Why would you all of a sudden do something like this? What would drive you for this? Right? Now, how does this translate into what we do as safety professionals? So, last month, it was 20 years, and I went through this. I didn't really go into this, but it was 20 years anniversary that I left corporate America for my own, to be self-employed. And this JCP Technical / Safety Wars is my second company that I had. The first one, I had business partners, and it didn't really work out. And that's a story for another day. That's a story I'm not going to share publicly. But it didn't work out. That happens in here. Now, about that time, I'm listening to the old Bachelor and Alexander program on WABC Radio. Again, I'm an audiophile all my life. listening to podcasts now, but back then primarily radio. But what happened is I got married, and I don't have the luxury of being up all night being married with that. So basically, they were on from 10 o'clock onward, and then eventually they went their separate ways. And John Batchelor is on WABC in New York, AM 710. And they had a guest on there named, he's a Canadian psychologist, Dr. Robert Hare. And they were talking about psychopathy. And I started, and this was put me on, was one of the first steps I had on the pathway to human and organizational performance. Right? This put me in there. And it was basically, I realized after listening to Dr. Robert Hare that I was probably working with some clinical, in some cases, clinical psychopaths. And he came out, Robert Hare, with a checklist in the 1970s that's been updated here. And you could check this out online with, they have self-assessments, am I a psychopath or not? And this checklist is meant for a clinician, for someone in a clinical environment, but it still is very useful for us. You could call someone a psychopath, psychopathic, psycho this, psycho that. What does it really mean, right? What is psychopathy? And there is, I'll get you the dictionary definition here of psychopathy, right? Basically, it's a complex personality disorder characterized by persistent antisocial behavior, impaired empathy and remorse, and bold egotistical traits. It is often considered a subset of antisocial personality disorder, but it is distinct in its specific emotional and interpersonal features. Now, hold on. There's one other thing. All right. So, anyway, they, and again, some of this is a little bit of pseudoscience and now it always gets in there. Anytime you get into deal with psychology, I've noticed something because there are different theories here. One internet guy, I won't mention his name because he's very controversial, did a, and it was not James O'Keefe, it was another one, went to a psychologist. Well, they had like four or five psychologists lined up, and he went there with the same symptoms and described to four or five different psychologists, and all of them gave him a different diagnosis and treatment. So it wasn't very good, but with that. But anyway, here we have this here, right? The PCL was originally developed in 1970, so it lists 22 different things. One, glibness or superficial charm. Two, previous diagnosis as a psychopath or something similar. Grandiose self-worth. Low frustration, tolerance, and proneness of boredom. Pathological lying and deception. Cunning. Lack of sincerity. Lack of remorse or guilt. Lack of affect and emotional depth. Callous or lack of empathy, parasitic lifestyle, short-tempered, poor behavioral controls, promiscuous sexual relations, early behavior problems, lack of realistic long-term plans, impulsivity, irresponsible behavior as a parent, frequent marital relationships, juvenile delinquency, poor probation or parole risk, failure to accept responsibility for their own actions, many types of offense, right, meaning offensive behavior, drug or alcohol abuse, not directly cause of antisocial behavior. Right, so they just, like to party it up. That's the Hare psychopathy checklist. Now, basically, there's one thing. Do you have someone in your life that is impacting your mental health that is like this? I did. I'll be in my. No, back in the day, Nobody today, they support safety a little bit more. But back in the day, there was zero support for safety at most companies. And who did they put in charge? People who probably met would have been, according to this checklist, definitely going out and being psychopaths. So how does this impact your workplace? I'm going to be honest with you. Sometimes I do use this. Am I a clinician? No. But we get people in here with this behavior, and I think we're all a little bit psychopathic to a certain point because we have societal norms, societal things. We may tell quote-unquote white lies and everything. That happens. I understand. Context and everything else. But when this gets serious, now you have to say, oh, wow, that's another issue here with that. So are we able to, based on when we're doing an accident investigation or we're trying to prevent accidents, can we identify people who have these issues? And guess what? This goes along with statement analysis, which is another subject where when people talk to you, what are they really saying is the basically it. And that's what a tool used by law enforcement personnel, which I've gotten a lot of textbooks on with that. What are they actually saying? And lawyers go through this all the time with things. But essentially, this is one tool that I use that in there is with this, right? With this. Do I go out and start calling people names? No, you don't do that because you're going to get sued or you're going to get fired. But you have to be able to assess people. Now, I was listening to a doctor several years ago. I forget her name. Beth something was her name with this. And she was on a talk show, and someone asked her a very good question. We all understand right, where we could go through this whole thing, what we went through the checklist, we could do this, we could do that. But what are the physical, right? What are the physical traits that we could be, look for? And she came up with some real things, right? Real good things. Now, some of these you have to be, post-mortem, or you probably have to have some type of very advanced, mental assessment here where you have like brain abnormalities. All right. I don't think you're going to be able to find that in the thing. Right. But you do have, pardon me, I have an itch on my ear here. Physiological indicators. Here you go. Reduced startle reflex. Psychopaths often exhibit a weaker startle response to a sudden stimuli, particularly in threatening or emotional contexts. For instance, they may not flinch or react as strongly to loud noises or shocking images. 2, low heart rate and skin conductance. Resting heart rate is often lower in individuals with psychopathic traits. Reduced skin conductance, meaning sweat gland activity during stressful situations, indicated a lower psychological arousal. A diminished fear response. Psychopaths tend to have a muted fear response, which may explain their willingness to engage in risky or dangerous behavior. Facial and behavioral indicators. Flat or inappropriate affect, meaning limited facial expressions of genuine emotion. Smiling or appearing indifferent in situations where most would show distress or concern. Unusual eye movements. Studies suggest that psychopaths may focus differently during emotional or distressing scenarios, such as avoiding the eyes of others or fixating on unusual details. Cold, intense stares. Often described as having a penetrating or predatory gaze, contributing to their ability to intimidate and manipulate others. Other observed traits. Physical presentation. While not universal, some psychopaths may project a confident polish or charming demeanor to manipulate others. High self-assurance or lack of nervousness, even in high-stakes situations. Some studies indicate psychopaths may require less sleep and display high energy levels. right? The sleep patterns are screwed up. Pain tolerance. Psychopaths may show reduced sensitivity to pain or discomfort, consistent with their diminished emotional and physiologic responses. And, of course, any of this stuff, I mean, you know, you have to be a clinical psychologist to actually diagnose this stuff. I'm not saying you should use this on everybody, but I'm going to tell you. The people who I've had problems with over the years in the workplace, especially fighting that their safety war we're always talking about, have had situations like this. Have had, the one that I'm most familiar with, probably had all of this stuff here that we have to say here. I can't say brain differences, but all the physiologic indications and the flat and behavioral indicators and physical presentation, sleep patterns, pain tolerance, they've had that. The other one was on the checklist. I could say they had at least 15 different things on here. So here's my question. If you're dealing with someone like this, how do you manage it? Because I tell you what, getting back, we're going to come full circle with this Daniel Penny situation where the alleged meltdown that this mental health crisis that Jordan Neely had. Guess what? I've seen that in the workplace many times. Maybe not that specific, but I have seen it so many times. My question is, what's your plan on dealing with this? Your plan cannot be you're going to beat the living crap out of the person and kill them. That's not part of the plan. If you're in the subway and this happens, what's your plan? Is it going to be to get involved? Because I tell you not, what? Because this person, Daniel Penny, got acquitted here. How many people are going to take that as emboldenment? How they're going to be emboldened to get involved now? Hey, I can't be held responsible. Now, there's still a civil case here, allegedly, from what I've heard. Don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I've heard on the internet. You can't always believe what you hear on the internet. Is that what we're going to do? With that, are we going to have people who are emboldened now the other way? Not only do we have people out there saying, "Well, we're going to be vigilantes now with this and we're angry and everything and blame everybody else," and everything. This is when I say when we have racial issues. By the way, people have said that and they said it on national TV, Channel 7 Eyewitness News yesterday at 11:55 a.m. on that they may not have put that up. But there have been stuff on YouTube. There's been stuff on Rumble. There's been stuff all over the internet with people threatening that, who are alleged leaders of some groups out there. Is that our response going to be? Now the other way is going to be, well, let's go, and I'm going to go. I would never allow a person like this out there to do this. I would beat them up. Oh, really? Because right now, I can tell you what, this guy is going to be paying a lot of money. There is not going to be I can see this. He's either going to be paying a lot of money or he's going to be spending a lot of money to defend this case in the civil court with this. Needless to say, right? And there have been numerous cases like this over the country. So what am I calling for? I'm calling for everybody to calm down, take it down on a notch, have a dialogue here, heal the country. We need some leaders in there to step in to try to mediate these situations to make things better, not to make things worse. Again, all of this negativity is not going to serve our workplaces, our communities, or our country well. We have to revel in our successes. We have to build each other up. We got to help people when we can and when they want help. You have to make things a little bit more fairer out there, even the playing field. We can't go out there and say, you know, be at each other's throats here. And I'm going to conclude by saying this, not saying my side is better or anything else, Well, when I was involved in politics back here in the 2010s, the groups that I was involved with made it a point to pray for their enemies, their political enemies. When Bill Clinton, I was at an event where Bill Clinton had his heart issue back in the mid-2000s. You know what happened? People were forming prayer chains for Bill Clinton, and they disagreed with him on a whole host of stuff. They were bitter political adversaries in the 1990s. We're talking activists, regular people like us. Well, it was. If you're not belonging to a group like that, that's going to be helping people, praying for them, wishing them the best, especially when they have health issues, health emergencies, things of that nature, you really have to look yourself in the mirror on that. Pray for your enemies. Try to learn, try to start a dialogue with people you disagree with, where you're, if you're able to, maybe come to an understanding. Maybe understand them a little bit more. That's what's needed here, not going out and vigilantism, and we're going to do this, we're going to... No, because let's remember something that I also said with a lot of these protests with Israel back in the earlier part of this year. The people who are paying the price, who are saying, do this, do that, become a vigilante, are not going to be the vigilantes. The people out there telling you to do X, Y, and Z and become disruptive, they're not going to be the ones doing it. But they're going to make you do it, and then you're paying the price. Let's not forget that. Seen plenty of that out there also. So with that, hey, that was 41 minutes here. We're going to go to a commercial break. And we'll be back at you.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
So I got a couple of comments. What's the deal with the cup? This is me and my daughter got a cup, right? Like father, like daughter, oh crap, right? I love my son and everything, but my son is more like my wife. My daughter is more like me. With that, she's a daddy's girl, and right with that, and also always has been, and yeah, she's got as my wife said when she was about 2 months old, 3 months old, first becoming a little bit aware of what was going on. She says to my mother, she's got him wrapped around her finger. Yeah, maybe a lot of truth to that. So we're going to move on to our Department of Labor website here, but before we do that. If you grew up in central New Jersey, in the Woodbridge, in the 1970s, every year it seemed like they covered in science the monarch butterfly and the life cycle of a monarch butterfly. And they didn't really go into the birds and the bees sort of thing, but just, you know, a cocoon, this, a caterpillar, you know, the whole transformation, blah, 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 blah. They covered it all over and over. Why? I don't know. And it was always the same. Well, here we have U.S. officials moved Tuesday to protect the monarch, an iconic orange and black butterfly from famous for its marathon migration across North America under the Endangered Species Act. I tell you what, we have a boatload of monarchs here, and I do not trim back any of my trees that or bushes that they feed on until they're gone for the year. And then I trim things back. I don't do anything in the spring because, you know, I realized that they were threatened, and guess what? I tried to provide an environment for them. But the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service proposal to designate the tiny butterfly that is threatened with extinction could have enormous consequences for landowners across its huge range, which extends across much of lower 48 states and Mexico and Canada. If the proposed rule is finalized, the monarch will become one of the most widespread species ever protected under landmark law. The federal scientists say the move is necessary because several factors, including logging and butterflies' overwintering habitat in Mexico, destruction of grasslands in the United States, and chemicals. The species has been declining for a number of years, fish and wildlife biologist Kristen Lund said in a video interview. We're hoping that this is a call to everybody to say the species is in decline. It is now our opportunity to reverse that decline. Guess what? Go Monarch. I guess that's going to be our new battle cry. Maybe someone could make a t-shirt with that. So here we have news releases here with this. Here we have, Department of Labor finds Alabama sausage manufacturer continues exposing to workers through safety hazards. A follow-up inspection, I think we got this the first time around here. Follow-up inspection by the U.S. Department of Labor at an Atala meat processing and packing facility in July 2024 found the company failing to correct safety hazards identified in two inspections dating back to 2022 continuing to endanger workers. So if they see you once, they're going to see you again. They're coming back. Maybe a couple of years, but they're coming back. December 2022, investigators with OSHA cited a company with seven serious and seven other than serious violations for not ensuring machines have proper safety guards, failing to lock out and tag out machines before maintenance. And again, OSHA returned to the processing facility in September 2023 for a follow-up, found many of the same violations. They received citations for 9 repeat and 2 serious violations, other than serious one. This July 2024 inspection, OSHA cited the company for 3 repeat violations for not developing, documenting, and using machine-specific lockout-tagout procedures, not training employees on the lockout-tagout program, and failing to develop and implement a written hazard communication program for employees exposed to hazardous chemicals. The agency cited 2 serious violations for missing electrical panel covers. So let's see what we have here. So this is from last week, 12/3/2024 on Tuesday here. And he just hit the website today. I don't know what's going on over there. They have more of a delay and fewer articles, it seems. Let's see how this is going to go after January 20th, right? Here we have citation 1, item 1, serious. Unused opening and electrical cabinets are not effectively closed. Substantially equivalent to protection to the equipment. So basically, we have, for example, you have punch-outs on a lot of boxes, power boxes, and those punch-outs have to be filled, so they may have recycled them or reused them from another area. Things I've seen that a lot, and they don't, but they have to be intact. You're only allowed to have wires coming through and conduit coming through, more importantly, conduit, not just wires, on things that are not punched out. We're looking at $9,680 there. 29, citation 1, item 2, type of violation serious. 1910.305, each outlet box is in completed installations and not have a cover, face plate, or fixture, canopy. The Sirius 9680. Citation 2, item 1. Repeat. This is where it gets expensive, folks. Procedures are not developed, documented, and utilized. I'm sorry here. For the control of potentially hazardous energy when employees engaged in activities covered in this by this section. On or about July 17th, 2024, they were employees were exposed to struck by and called in hazards when the employer did not develop, document, or utilize machine-specific lockout, tagout procedures for equipment that was not cord and plug, such as, but not limited to, the biscuit cutter, and for equipment such as, but not limited to, the bag sealer and the doughboy, with multiple energy sources, including electricity, pneumatic air, heat, and when employees are clearing a jam and performing cleanup and sanitation hazards. That's 32,000. Citation 2, item 2, repeat serious. The employer did not provide adequate training to ensure that purpose and function of energy control program was understood by the employees, 19,359. And citation 2, item 3, repeat. The employer did not develop, implement, and or maintain at the workplace a written hazard communication program with that. They were talking about chemicals such as ammonia, but not only ammonia. $32,263. Again, all of these things. What I hear from a lot of people, well, it's too expensive here. Everything's so expensive to comply with. I'm sorry. You could call 845-269-5772 and have some affordable compliance here with this stuff. It's not a lot of money to give your people training. Really isn't on this stuff. Compared to this, so they have $100,000 here for mitigating these things, right? But they don't have that for the training or anything else. What are they, you know, I don't get it. I don't get it. I'm sorry with that. And here we have time for one more. Here, 7 minutes here. Bakeware company faces $182,000 in fines following two worker amputation because of unguarded machines. So let's see what this is. I'm not going to read the thing. So unclosed, you'll find citations, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to have time to do anything else if I read this press release here. 29 CFR 1910-17, lack of guarding, $11,292. All right, that was the main one on that one. Now, there's another letter here. We're scrolling on down. Here, it would help if I added it to the stream. Here. Citation 1, item 1. No procedures for lockout tagout, $8,067. Citation 1, item 2. No inspection of the procedures. Right, to make sure that they were still applicable. Do that in January. January is coming up. I tell everybody, recertify all your stuff in January. $11,292. Citation 1, item 3. Another one, no training. $11,292. And with this one, serious machine guarding missing. And we have on four different machines here, $11,292. And citation 2, item 1, on this one, was willful. The employer did not provide and ensure the usage of point-of-operation guards or properly applied point-of-operation devices on every operation performed on the mechanical press. Again, it sounds like things were missing. I'm not sure here, but that's what I'm going to guess at. And $129,058. Again, $171,000. Very, very cheap to mitigate all these hazards. I'm sorry, folks. That's what we got. So we're going to exit out. We're going to insert another commercial here or video. Then we're going to exit out and do our patriotic. Do our patriotic music here. So with that.
I'm sure you've heard the news. Safety training is evolving, and you should be too. Outdated safety training isn't just boring, it's dangerous. If your safety trainer is still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety from 25 years ago, it's time for a change. Imagine safety training that actually addresses the hazards unique to your workplace. No more generic, one-size-fits-all solutions. The Safety Wars team at SafetyWars.com is here to revolutionize how you approach safety with customized training that's relevant, engaging, and effective. Contact Jim Polzel at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you're receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces. Say goodbye to outdated safety training and hello to a safer, more productive environment. Visit SafetyWars.com now.
32 years of
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
Shades.